That's welcome. A little nicer than my crew call intro.
Isn't that awesome? We did that all by ourselves. We
spared it was done people. by a young person.
The guy that took all those videos, super awesome really guy. He's really good at what
really
he does.
Good. He was really good. He did a nice spread on some Pan Am business train.
Yeah,
we know.
Yeah, I heard. We do know that guy.
We do.
Welcome everyone to the Second Section podcast. I'm your host Andy Dorsch, and with me is my co-host, partner in crime, Mike Ostertag. Mike, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am upright and taking nourishment, and we have a special treat for the section crew this evening. A fellow podcaster has joined our ranks. Mike Rose, welcome to the Second Section podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for coming on. You're bringing the quality up of the show just by being here this evening. So thank you.
We'll see.
So thank you.
Show's not over yet.
Yeah, show's not over yet. So, Mike, welcome to the show. We got about 35, 36. The number keeps going up here. People joining us in the chat. Why don't you give yourself a brief introduction about yourself, your exploits in model railroading, and let the section crew know who you are and what it is that you do.
Oh boy, that's a pretty broad opening there. This take could take
time.
A while.
Take your time.
You know, I'm. I guess I've been doing trains most of my life, actually. Starting out in the basement, my dad with his Lionel. You know, like so many of us. And I remember going into HO right around maybe age 11 or so. And I'm just a bit more than age 11 at this point. So, you know, I've been doing it a long, long, long time.
So you're talking like early 90s then?
Something like that.
Yeah. Early 90s.
And, you know, it's funny. So when you're a model railroader and you've been doing it for a long, long, long time, you've probably built more than one layout. And I've built like a whole bunch of layouts depending upon where I was living at the time, and never really ever even remotely got close to finishing one. And the house that I'm in right now is about 35 years old, and it was bought the land, designed the house in part with the basement with a layout in mind, and have been and worked really for years trying to develop the right concept for the layout, and never really felt like I was ready to commit to anything. And, you know, went from complete freelance. It was always a Pennsylvania-based layout, though, which is kind of interesting. So I think it was Rail Fanning in Pennsylvania that kind of put the hook in me. And boy, if there's a better place to, get to like trains than Pennsylvania, I'd like to know what it is. I mean, there's a lot of great places, but, Pennsylvania had so much heavy duty railroading, so many short lines, beautiful scenery, the kind of stuff that I wanted to model. And, it was on one rail fanning trip to Pennsylvania where I think it was on old U.S. Route 6 up in northeast Pennsylvania. And I'm driving around there and I'm thinking, geez, this place looks like a model railroad. It had the steep wooded hillsides and, the roads and railroad. And we were all funneled into these valleys alongside the river. And I stumbled upon a couple of interesting looking industries and things that are actually on my layout today. It was that trip that made me kind of connect with the locale, you know, that I ended up modeling. And then, you know, I met some guys at train meets who I've become lifelong friends with, you know, guys like Mike Confalone and Neil Schofield and Jim Dufour and people like that.
Nobody has anybody ever heard of before, you know.
it's really like a birds of a feather kind of thing. You know, we have very similar styles, and we've all worked on each other's layouts before. And I know I'm leaving people out, but it's not, I'm not like trying to complete the whole list here. Just giving some examples here. If I left you out, don't yell.
Oh, we're going to hear about it in the chat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let us know.
Nasty chat me. But the point is that I think to one extent or another, you know, we kind of cross-pollinated and learned some things from each other, which I found for me kind of like dramatically ramped up the skill set much faster than if I were trying to do it on my own, you know.
Sure, sure.
Confalone in particular, I think, got me going on some more modern scenery techniques, and it was really much needed because I was still kind of rooted in the 70s, you know. Okay. And I couldn't do the layout that I have, particularly with what I've got done in the last, say, 10 years using the old techniques, you know. So,
sure.
That was really kind of like a big step forward. And then when you get the concept for your layout down, and then you work on it, it's amazing how much progress you can make, you know, because I think that a lot of us spend most of our time sitting around going, what am I going to do here? You know, what should this look? And when you have it in your head, at least for me, when you can see it in here, you can make it, you know, happen there. And then when you know how to do it, you can work pretty rapidly, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think people look at me as somebody who just kind of like, you know, 12 hours a day, every day, you know, down there, but it's really not like that. You know, I spend just as much time staring at the wall as anybody else. But when I decide, to work on it, you know, I'm pretty efficient and productive, and it helps to have everything you need to do it and all the tools and all of that. So, you know, I would say I probably had the most fun model railroading in the last 10 years because I kind of got it and had all the right concept and all the right stuff. And, you know, and we're blessed with having a lot of stuff that didn't exist prior to modern times, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a golden age of model railroading, which fits right in with our demographic, I think.
Yeah. Let me ask a question for the viewers out there, for those that don't know who you are. So, Mike, you're model railroad. Why don't you tell us about it? Is it a prototype or freelance?
Model prototype, and it's based on a segment of Conrail's Lehigh line. Ooh. In 1984.
Sure.
Played around with eras quite a bit. At one time, I was like a 90s modeler because that's when I was doing the most rail fanning. But when I decided to focus on this particular line in this particular area, as I learned more and more about it, in many cases from people who had worked on it, you know, guys like Mike Bednar and Tony V and Ed Philbin and all kinds of people who literally ran trains on this line. You know, Mike Bednar in particular was extremely generous with information for me. I had I had seen his articles in TRP and wrote a note to Jamie Sorrentis asking if he could maybe forward something from me to Mike.
Yeah.
And he said sure. So I sent Mike a note, and like 2 or 3 weeks later, I got this thick envelope in the mail. And it was, I don't know how many pages of handwritten notes answering all of my questions, additional information, hand-drawn maps, his phone number, it was just unbelievable. Wow. Unbelievable. And I ended up having a couple of phone calls with him where I literally took notes. Like I had a legal pad there and just scribbled as fast as he was talking. I ended up meeting him also once at a slideshow at DuPont, and just what a wonderful guy, you know what I mean? But the kind of information you get from somebody who has actually run real trains on the line that you're modeling is just beyond invaluable, you know.
So I mean, you can't put a price on that.
No, and it, you know, there's not a lot of information out there about this particular area, which was part of the appeal for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not modeling the middle division, you know, it's something right. A little off the beaten path. And so it's kind of fun getting to you know, learn about it. But it's definitely a spaghetti bowl when I was driving around in that sort of greater Scranton, Pittston area, you know, you every couple hundred yards, you're crossing somebody's tracks and you're thinking, whose tracks are these? You know what I mean? It was it really, and it was only when I stumbled upon a Conrail map that came that really ended up being a giant PDF. When you printed it, it was probably probably 5 feet across and 3 feet high. That's how big the map was and how detailed it was. So I did have a big version of it printed so I could kind of get the whole thing in one overview, but the PDF enabled me to zoom in on whatever I wanted to see in whatever detail. And it was like from my era. It was unbelievable.
Oh, wow. So
this one document kind of clarified the whole thing for me and enabled me to understand a lot of what I was reading about. You know, I need to like make the connections. If I can't make that connection, if you don't get it, you don't get it, right?
Yeah, right.
So you're able to make that connection. So that was, I think, instrumental in cementing the concept. And what's kind of neat is I get to do what most people probably don't get to do. And I ended up putting an addition on to my house a few years ago, about 4.5 years ago, I guess at this point. And it almost doubled the size of my layout.
What?
That was kind of the idea. It was basically a basement. One side of my basement was a walkout. So the addition connected my home through this whole big driveway area to the building that I'm in now, which was my office and workshop.
So
I added 800 square feet to the layout by doing that.
Okay. So you added 800 square feet. So what are we to give our listeners? 1,800
is the whole layout.
1,800 square feet.
Is that
wait, like what?
Oh my god!
Did he say 1,800?
Makes mine look small, so yeah. It's all relative.
Oh, so 1,800 wow. Square feet. Is it a single deck or double deck deal or?
Yes.
Good. That's
excellent.
That's
we like those answers.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons it's so hard to get a track plan that would make sense to someone who hasn't like been here is that it is double deck, but not a scenic double deck. So there are a number of let's call them corridors or pathways that are hidden trackage that are the key to connecting the various levels, but it's not a it's not your dyed in the wool, like, you know, a Tony Custer type, you know, scenic double deck layout. Everything you're looking at looks like one level for the most part.
Okay. For anybody, I'm just going to ask this for anybody that might have heard you on Scotty Mason or your crew call. Is Mahoopany finally done?
Oh, it's been done for a long time. Well, right. My goal was to get the whole thing presentable. So in other words, to the point where when you're running a train through it, feel like you're running a train through something as opposed to bare plywood, you know? So I found that the more areas that I got to that point, the more I enjoyed operating the layout, you know? So I always thought there's plenty of opportunity to go back and improve a scene and super detail and do whatever you want to do to it until you can't do that anymore, you know, but the goal for me was to get the whole thing presentable so that when you're running trains, like what I found was, you know, you're kind of in it, you're running your train and then you pop out into an unscenic area and it just takes you right out of it, you know?
Yep.
For me.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. The reason I asked that is because I remember in the shows, I remember all of a sudden 1 week everything, well, I think I've just about got this to where I like it. And then the week after it's, well, like I went back down and I took this out. And then we did
this.
Layout kaboom. Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that a little later. I want to dive into layout kaboom for layout kaboom.
Yep.
So Mike Ostertag was just saying, you may have heard your voice out on the model railroad airwaves. So you do a podcast. That's
done a podcast or three over the years.
Done a podcast or three.
Yeah. I started out with on the model railroad podcast with Scotty Mason and Jimmy Degnan and Doug Fiscali and Dave Frary.
Was Jimmy Simmons on that one too?
Later. Jimmy was the next incarnation, and we did that with Joe Duckworth.
Yep. Mm. Right.
And Joe was the editor, so he would literally take the show and edit in whatever spots there were, and balance out the, you know, the levels of the four people and all that. A lot of post production, all stuff you'd never get me to do, you know.
Oh no.
So
what's funny is because Joel lives in Michigan, lives in right, like up by Marquette, yeah, up in the Upper Peninsula, and right, you guys are on the East Coast, and Joel's up in the Upper Peninsula.
Right. Welcome to the modern world of the
internet. Yeah. Right.
So we did that. So that show followed the original show. And I think when I came on the show originally, I was doing a segment called something like prototype modeling with Mike Rose or something unpretentious like that. And, it was just to talk about my particular focus, which has always been about prototype modeling, even when I was freelance. It was still proto-based. So cruise for any particular kind of venture, that, you know, it has kind of like a beginning, middle, and end, and people get busy, they lose interest, they want to go off and do other things. So you're always trying to, like, you know, reconstitute things after X amount of time. So the next crew was the one that we just talked about, and then that kind of ran its course. And then we took a little bit of a hiatus, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, I want to eliminate everything that was kind of a pain in the neck about the other show, getting everybody together at the right time and post-production and all that. So I called up Scott and I said, let's do a show and we'll call it Mike and Scotty Live, and it'll just be us having a conversation.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then we just rolled with it, you know, whatever it was, whatever came out, that's what the show was. And it was actually kind of fun and couldn't be easier. So it didn't take up, you know, a lot of extra time above and beyond that. We did that for at least a couple of years, maybe might have been a little more. I'm kind of hazy on all that, but eventually Scott got busy with life stuff, and
sure,
it was the same old story. And that's when I came up with the idea of Crew Call. I was on the phone with one of my buddies, and I, you know, halfway through our usual phone conversation, I said, you know, this is a show people would probably enjoy eavesdropping on that. So that's why I came up with the concept for Crew Call. And it's basically people I'm interested in talking with. And it's this kind of thing. It's exactly
just kind of hanging out and talking about trains.
Right. And it's, you know, it is people that I operate with either on their layout, or they come to mine, or people I've met at various train shows. It's just, I like to think of it as interesting people doing hopefully interesting things and talking about it. It's kind of the whole concept, really.
And we can find that out on the World Wide Web at the modelrailroadpodcast.com, correct?
Correct. You can listen to it on that website. You can download it from there. You can get it through iTunes or any of your other kind of podcast sources. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get it. We have a Facebook group, which I think you were kind enough to put the link to somewhere.
Yep, in the show notes. Yep,
that's a good way to know when a show comes out. It used to be a monthly show and really came out reliably. And then I just got busy. You know, I got busy with life stuff. And I'm in IT still. And at the beginning of the pandemic, boy, it just took off again. It just kind of went crazy. And it hasn't let down a whole lot really since then, you know. So this is kind of the last gasp before retirement to, you know, put a couple extra bucks away. So I'm still working
for the next edition that we're going to.
The next 800 square feet.
When you've done an addition after building a house, you realize you only have X amount of that in you. And that has now been satisfied. And 1,800 square feet is plenty of layout. We find that my buddy Dave comes by and we'll operate 3 to 5 times a month, let's just say. And there's a lot of action on the layout, even though there's a small number of mainline trains. So, I mean, I can briefly describe that if you think that would be of interest.
Yeah.
The Conrail line ran from that I modeled ran from Sayre all the way to Allentown. So my line starts, Sayre is my staging, my north staging area. And you head south through Wyalusing and Mahoopany and Meshopin and all these little towns that are along the Susquehanna River, which is just basically a snake path through that portion of Pennsylvania. And you end up in Pittston, which is an area steeped in railroad history, going back to the Lehigh Valley days and coal mining days. And the area was honeycombed with short lines. So I have several short line interchanges on the layout as well. I also have from Pittston, there's a segment that goes up to Taylor on the Conrail Taylor secondary, which how they got to Scranton. And you interchange with D&H at Taylor Yard. In my era, D&H actually ran more mainline trains on portions of the Lehigh Line than Conrail did. So we run a lot of D&H mainline freight as well.
Okay.
Conrail interchanges with the D&H, the Pocono Northeast interchanges with the D&H. There's another little short line that operates out of Towanda called the TMSL, which is the Towanda Monroton Shippers Lifeline, and they operate with one SW1, and they usually trundle
that's
all right the way
up down. That's my kind of railroad right there.
Hey, yeah. back in the day, they would trundle all the way from Towanda down to Monroton with one or two covered hoppers to a grain mill there. That was the whole reason for being of the line.
So quick question here from the chat tonight. So Split Rock comes in and says, how was choosing a prototype, an era, and a specific location, how has that helped you with your modeling?
That's great. It's a great question. That's from my buddy Thomas out there. Hey, Thomas.
Yeah.
who is quite the hoot, I tell you what. Yeah, he's such a good guy, but he comes up with some pretty good one-liners, yeah. I tell you what.
That's where all our payroll goes for the comedic relief from Split Rock.
So I think it depends on the individual. Trundle. It depends on the individual. So I think that some people, like Confalone's an example of that. He got like a vision for the Allagash in his head, and he's got, main railroading in his head, and him and his buddy Joe Posick have detailed conversations about operations, and the whole operating concept for his railroad was in his head, and then he basically created it based on prototypical ideas and concepts, and that worked for him, and that was something I was trying to do as a freelancer, but wasn't that good at it. So it was when I decided on a place that I wanted to model and then learned about how the operations were, that's kind of what drove, if you want to get a certain operational scheme, okay, what do I have to build that enables me to accomplish that? I want to have these interchanges. I want to have these consignees that drive the traffic. That's interesting to me. So I kind of like work backwards from here's the problem. How do I solve it? And then when you just establish, I can't say it was a 5-minute job to design the layout or to redesign the layout. And that might be a nice segue to Layout Kaboom. Actually,
I think I'm getting the itch. I'm getting the itch to go to Layout Kaboom here shortly.
So even the original portion of the layout was half the basement. And, 35 years ago, the other half of the basement was my office before I built the building that I'm in now. Yeah. And eventually it became obvious that having a 2-year-old doing the Watusi on the floor above you while you were trying to be on a business call didn't work. And I decided to build the adjacent building, which had a workshop on the first floor and my office on the second floor. And And then that freed up the space where the office used to be. And I put some staging out there and a pool table and went through a few years where we would play more pool than work
running.
In part driven by the fact that the whole concept hadn't really gelled in my mind yet, you know.
Sure.
Fast forward a little bit, went through a divorce, got married again, things stabilized, things are happy. And I'm a biker. I ride bikes a lot, and I do some of my best thinking on a bike ride for some reason.
Sure.
I remember one bike ride in particular. I was out in South Dartmouth, out in the wilds, and it just clicked in my head what I needed to do or how I could change the existing layout without tearing it down completely to being more of what I wanted it to be. And I remember that day pretty clearly, actually, because I thought, okay, turn this bike around. I got to get home before I lose this, because I couldn't wait to get downstairs and see if the idea that I had gotten was actually workable. And yeah. I got home, I got off my bike, still in my stupid spandex. I went downstairs and grabbed the tape measure because I'm figuring grades and stuff, you know. And I probably spent another hour down there just like that before I realized, yep, this is possible. Layout kaboom. So many sections of the initial layout got sequentially taken right down to the bench work and redone. And that's when I started employing a lot of the Confalonian scenic techniques.
Sure.
Got serious about mass producing trees, you know, like a mad.
Oh, right.
And, yeah. And that whole thing went actually really well and was a lot of fun to do because, again, when you can employ everything you've already learned, and now you know what you want to do, you know how to do it, and you could just go ahead and do it. It was very rewarding, you know, very engrossing. I just kind of, you know, sunk myself into it and enjoyed it. And I can remember, you know, having the first op session and the new concept, and all the guys came over, you know, and it, you know, it was great. You know, I mean, there's some bugs to work out, especially the first time you do an op session. But I remember freaking Confalon said to me, he says, boy, if you just had a yard, you know, because everything was, I just thought, and I said, you know, he's right. Cause he's always right. You know, he tosses in this verbal hand grenade and then kind of grins and goes home. But, you know, I just thought about it a little more, and then kind of figured out how I was going to do that, which involved my first foray into a different level. That's where I took where the staging yard was and dropped it and built Pittston Yard on top of that staging yard and redesigned the whole basement is sort of a helix, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's how I was able to get to that level. And all was well until I decided to build the addition. And then the fun part there was figuring out how the addition would enable me to do the other really fun stuff that I wanted to do, which was add the D&H and some other scenic areas. And also move a 22-foot long yard into another building through an opening. And I had to devise a way to take it off the wall, keep it intact, put it on these rolling carts. And we had the whole thing figured out. And we got it just the point where we could kind of jockey it and try to get it out the door. And because it was 6 inches too long, I had to lop a hunk off of it because it just wouldn't go. I had to chop it. And I reassembled it out there. It wasn't a big deal. But the whole relocation of Pittston Yard, that 22-foot long Pittston Yard, and the staging below it, by the way, into the new building, and then all of the connective tissue that went into filling in the gaps in between was what, for me, really made the layout finally become, you know, what I always wanted it to be. And that's what it is now.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. My house is 30 feet by 28, and I'm sitting here thinking I'm almost in a box. I'm like 22 feet. Holy crap. That's a lot of yard.
You know
how wide is it?
About 26, 28 inches, something like that.
So you got probably close to 12 tracks in there or so. 12 or maybe a little bit more.
It's probably 8 tracks plus some other supporting kind of stuff. I didn't want it to be just track, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, there's an access road, there's an engine facility, there's a, you know, a clean out track on the other side of the access road. So again, another modeling resource was finding the Conrail ZTS maps, which is their zone track spot, highly detailed maps of the entire Conrail system. And those I studied at length. And, you know, when you look at those maps, you can kind of see in large part why a lot of the tracks needed to be where they were.
Yeah.
And I remember I was trying to figure out the trackage arrangement for one of the little towns, Laceyville. It's got kind of a complicated little track arrangement for a little town. And my buddy Dave and I were kind of hemming and hawing about it. And another friend, Jim Lincoln, was over that day, and he just kind of ambled over and he said, "I just do it like the prototype arrangement."
Yeah.
And we looked at him, we thought, it's not a bad idea. And, you know, it seems fairly obvious in retrospect, but, you know, some of the best ideas in retrospect are like that, you know? So,
do you find yourself sometimes like with a large layout like that? Like I have a smaller layout and I find myself doing this, but you end up looking at a scene and you overanalyze everything that you're doing. And then it's something. Like you make the most simple thing more complicated than it actually needs to be.
So that's an example of what I was talking about, the kind of thing I used to do. And that's like carrying around a bag of bricks. So when you put that bag of bricks down, you can be a lot more nimble. You know what I mean? And for me, it was just a conscious decision to stop doing that. But what enabled me to do it was getting the concept clear in my head and then just doing it. Oh, you found Laceyville.
Yeah. So I was just... So I have no idea what, you know, part of the world we're talking about here, but I've managed to find Laceyville.
So you see how curvy the river is, right?
Yeah, look at this.
That's the Susquehanna.
Yeah.
And the railroad closely follows it. And Laceyville had a few interesting consignees there. In fact, look at this. You probably see, if you get it right, you'll see some silos. That's not it.
Right here? No. No, yeah, I gotta go east west.
There it is. So zoom in on exactly. So see the silos? Those are on my layout.
Wow. So
Vern's Feeds.
It was a it was Laceyville Agway at the time.
Okay.
And then if you just go to the left, you see the homes along there.
Yeah.
So all of those houses are on my layout. Along with Whipple's Lumber across the street from them. I had a guy, a talented modeler named Rich Cobb, a talented structure builder, and he built all of those houses for me.
Wow.
So all of them on Main Street here.
Yep.
If we're looking at Laceyville, all of these little houses.
Yeah, I think I've got about 5 or 6 of them on my layout.
That's so fantastic. Cool.
So okay,
it's true prototype modeling. I had a guy visit one time. He was actually the Tony V's father. Tony V was an engineer. I'll get to Tony V in a sec because he was an important character too. But his dad grew up in that area.
Yeah.
And so when they came and visited the layout, you know, and he walked into that room, he says, "Oh wow, I used to fish right there."
Yeah.
You know? And the fact that he could recognize it, I thought was kind of cool.
That's awesome. So,
but Tony V was a Reading and Northern engineer. He works for Amtrak now.
Okay.
And apparently, he went to one of my clinics in Valley Forge one time, and maybe he started paying attention to my articles or something after that because I was modeling an area that he worked in. You know, he was driving through the whole area on trains every day. So on the podcast group, I think I had mentioned that I was getting ready to maybe build Pittston Yard, something like that. I forget the exact context, but he sent me an IM and he said, you know, I can get you a tour of Pittston Yard if you're interested. And I said, interested?
Yes, yes please.
And we, you know, we've since become friends. He's just one of the nicest people I've ever met. My buddy Dave and another buddy of mine, Ken Karlowitz, went down there on a Saturday. I don't know if it's by luck or by chance, but it was like the hottest day you could possibly imagine. It was like the Bataan Death March. But we it's not a small yard. And he patiently took us through every inch of the yard and narrated the entire thing. It was one of the most interesting days I've ever experienced. You know, the guy is just like a fountain of high quality information. And many of the photos that I took that day were instrumental in getting things right in the yard. And a lot of the modeling info or operational info that I got from him was critical to developing the operational scheme of the layout. So sometimes, you know, a very small number of people make a gigantic difference in how much fun you can have building something and operating something. And that information has resulted in a layout that would have been fine, but is way more fun because of all of that, you know?
So from Sayre to Pittston, you model that entire, well, most of it, right?
Yeah.
The whole stretch.
Obviously so, compressed, but yeah. Yeah.
So what's the overall trackage in terms of miles from Sayre to Pittston, or Pittston, not Pittston.
Where? To where?
He did what in his cup?
Here come the comments. I know it.
As the car drives, you can drive from Pittston to Sayre in under 2 hours if you don't stop.
Okay.
I'm told. I've never done it without stopping because
I was going to say,
right. But if you just drove up there, it's under 2 hours and it's not on a super highway. So it's not at 60 miles an hour. So it's not a huge distance by any means. It's probably, I don't know, maybe 60 miles, maybe
60 miles
ish.
And then how many station stops or towns did you translate from that part of the line to your railroad?
Okay, so coming out of staging, the first town you get to is Towanda.
Towanda.
And the reason I modeled Towanda was they had the interchange with the TMSL that we already talked about there. They had the a very interesting Agway fertilizer mixing plant that was rail served. They had the Osram Sylvania facility there that got interesting tank cars. So that was a good consignee. And also nearby was the big Masonite plant.
Okay.
So all of that is modeled on my layout, along with a couple of things in the next town of Wyalusing. That one has a Wyalusing Planing, which is a planing mill, and Wyalusing Purina, which was a pretty complicated and fairly modern grain mill.
Hmm.
It's completely gone now.
I'm looking for it here as a... Looking down the bomber scope, and I can't see it.
Did you find Wyalusing?
Yeah, I'm right here on Wyalusing.
All right, so you shouldn't have any problem finding Masonite. You can't miss it. It's right next to the river and the big bridge that crosses the river. Go up north more, a little more. Where's the bridge across the river? Okay, I don't know. That's so small on my monitor. I can't even tell where you are. Now, go back to Wyalusing.
Go back to Wyalusing. This is the fun part of the show here.
So Mike, you're with the way this winds and follows the Susquehanna,
Turn back curve is at the end of a peninsula, for example.
Yeah, it's and you can have peninsula after peninsula after peninsula and just actually come pretty close to doing what the real railroad did.
And that's why I said you can you should find Towanda, actually. That'll probably help you. You can find Towanda. This is right across the river. So there's Towanda. Now go south a little bit. Find where the tracks cross the river on a railroad bridge. Go up a little. There's Route 6. It'll be north of that.
Let's see. This is right there.
There it is. Yep.
Yep. Got right it. There.
So that bridge crosses. So I've got that scene modeled on my layout.
Nice.
Greatly compressed because that's like a 22 span bridge or something. The Susquehanna is pretty shallow there, but it's really wide. And if you follow that track to the right and down, you will get to the Masonite plant, which is keep going.
All right. I'm getting excited here. Is this it over here?
Yeah, I think. Keep going a little more.
Here it is.
So I've modeled the Masonite plant. In my era, that was taking a dozen all door cars inside the plant
for loading nice.
Masonite. So that's a pretty major facility on my layout. It's got the big, you see the big sawdust pile there on the right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I've got that. And lots of pipes. And, you know, I enjoy building these industrial facilities. So
that's cool.
And you know, you could follow the line all the way down and eventually run into Mahoopany. And Mahoopany itself, the plant, is built right on a big bend in the river. So it occupies an entire peninsula on my layout.
Wow.
So we're getting a news flash here from our friend of the podcast, Tom Johnson.
Tom Johnson. Hey, Tom.
And he says, not sure if Mike was going to share any photos of the railroad, but he took a few pictures of the bazillion trees that you have on your model railroad here, and a favorite covered hopper on Mike's layout. Would you mind if I pulled those up to show the world here?
By all means, it's more than I'm prepared to share.
But with the
some of Tom's foam is on my layout.
Oh, really? Here, let me stop.
That's another story.
That we're gonna get this is quite the entertaining evening. So just as I fumble through the darkness here and try and share what would appear to be a couple of messages here from Tom Johnson. So let's see if this goes the way that I'm gonna
and Tom Split Rock has a question. He wants to know is Masonite named after Scotty? So that's the kind of stuff we can expect throughout the rest of this show, Mike. Is that kind of stuff?
It's not, but it should be.
He just earned his pay for the show.
Yeah.
So this track here is the is the Taylor secondary coming into Scranton.
Holy cow.
So I'm gonna try and that was the worst.
Yeah. Again, with our high quality production.
I blame me. I truly blame me on this.
No, you're doing all right. That's a local. That's probably WJPJ 11 from Pittston Yard up to Taylor.
So
he's climbing about a 2.25% grade there.
Wow. And hold on before we move on to the next picture. Shopping. Yeah. So before we move on to that was Miss Shop. And what are we using for trees here? And I say we like I'm living in your layout here. What are you using for trees, Mike?
The armatures are all Scenic Express Super Trees.
Oh my gosh!
Holy cow!
So
I've made about
north
of 4,000 of them at this point.
Oh my gosh!
Wow!
I know.
Oh.
When you say that out loud, it sounds much worse.
Holy cow. I think we had an email prior to the show where you said you had to explain yourself. This is amazing. So over 4,000 trees. And here's, you said this is Meshopin?
Yeah, this is Meshopin. So this is, see how there's like a sort of a hillside backdrop?
Yeah.
The other side of that backdrop is the big Mahoopany plant. And Meshopin is adjacent to Mahoopany on the prototype as well. So this would be one of the locals operating out of Pittston. And from the looks of things, he's on his way to Skinner's Eddy.
Okay, that's awesome.
Whipple's warehouse there. So he's got some lumber for there.
That's awesome. Skinner's Eddy. Sounds like a band name. Oh, now look at that.
So here the Robert local is switching Kintner milling.
Yep.
And Kintner had a little had a switch and a, an extra little stub track to enable, you know, switching an empty out and putting a load in. On the prototype, the track up to Kintner milling is much longer than what I have here. So they really did need that.
So, Mike, this Conrail Penn Central car in front here with the weathering and the old Penn Central. Yeah, that take you know, with the old Penn Central showing through there. That's fantastic.
That car has a real history to it as well. That was the prototype kit, I believe, from Railyard Models. That I worked with Gene Fusco to do the instructions for.
Okay.
So I ended up building that car with very rudimentary instructions that I kind of, you know, worked with Gene to sort of develop, you know, because there's a lot of brass origami in that car. I mean, it builds into a beautiful car, but wow. And if you've ever built a Railyard Models kit, it is just a labor of love. You know, his stuff was beautifully engineered and extremely well designed. But I did that with this car, and I did that with the Acid Tank car, which really kicked my butt to the point where I was going down to the local siding here in Fall River and taking detailed photos of real acid cars so I could understand how some of the brass was supposed to fold up.
And then the locomotive here, the old Penn Central patch out here, is that a yep. GP38?
Yes, that's an old Jim Six locomotive, believe it or not. And I pried a couple of those out of his hands when he was backdating many, many, many years ago.
Oh, hey, we got a question from the group here. Ralph Renzetti asked, "Do you practice prototype size trees, or how do you calculate like your size trees that you need for the area that you're doing?" Like,
I use the Mark One eyeball. If it looks right to me, it's right. I find
as
that,
good as anything else.
I mean, most people are modeling. When you think about it, trees should tower over a tree, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the super trees tend to be, if you know, if you're picking the right ones, obviously,
right.
You know, they tend to look right, particularly massed like that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to recreate the heavily forested Pennsylvania hillsides, and combined with the green florist foam, which really lends itself to being able to easily plant things.
Right.
I think it kind of achieves it. There you go.
What you and Mike Confalone are doing on your respective layouts. That scenery.
He's got a whole different problem. He's doing a different season. So, you know.
Yeah. That green foam is a game changer. It really is.
I would venture to say Mike is probably doing one of the hardest seasons there is to model, to be honest with you.
I think the hardest season, just my opinion, is to do fall convincingly.
Mm.
Because you want to capture the panoply of color, but it's very easy to make it look garish. You know what I mean? So it's very tricky to get right.
Right.
Yeah. It's hard to find that balance between everything that's already dropped its leaves and the stuff that's still right. kind of like that transition. Cause some trees change later and some are very early.
Right. And the thing to keep in mind is that color, I don't think scales like you think it does. You know, it doesn't scale like physicality. So you have to approach it from, like a Tom Johnson artist's eye, I think, to be able to capture that. There's a reason I'm doing summer much easier.
Yeah. So I got another shot that I want to pull up here and just bear with me. But while I'm doing all that nonsense here, so we got about 65, 70 people out in the chat tonight. That's an interesting question. Chime in. What's the hardest season to model on a model railroad? Is it winter, fall?
That's depending on where you are in the country too. That can be, you know,
Think about the Midwest and all of the, trying to model the vast grasslands and things like that. That would be no picnic either. So what you see here is a northbound. This is probably ALCG, Allentown to Corning, and he's coming out of Vosburgh Tunnel down the end there, and the yard tracks to the left of the train aren't usually empty. That's unusual, but that's East Yard. And you see the tank car on the left. That's parked in Chemical Yard for Mahoopany. So he's just coming into Mahoopany now.
So how many locomotives do you have on the front of that consist? Like, is it six? Probably five?
Yeah, probably five.
Wow. And are they all with the same brand decoder in there?
Yeah, the entire I have about 145 in-use locomotives, give or take. And yeah. It's all Loke Sound. It's all scale sound speakers. They all have power packs.
Yeah, like keep alive type circuits in them. Awesome.
Yeah, I don't like sound resets.
It's no fun.
No,
it's no fun at all.
It just breaks the mood.
So do you have, so during an operating session, all your locomotives have sound in them?
Yes.
Every one of them. It's got to be just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, one thing we've all agreed is that the more locomotives you have on the layout, the lower the volume you want each of them to be.
Yep. Okay.
It'll drive you out of there, you know? So if it's just you downstairs, one switcher, crank it up. But most of the time you want it at a lower volume than you'd initially think.
Sure.
I think anyway.
Let's see here. I'm going to bet a dollar that Tom Johnson, who's playing with us here, playing along at home, he's going to have another picture here, and it looks like it's a bridge.
When you guys are actually operating, you have all your jobs running at 1,800 feet, and this might sound like a joking question, but I'm being serious.
Okay.
Do you get any echo effect in the basement from like where you can hear a job coming, and it just sounds because of the way your layout has that mountainous look to it and everything like that, where you can kind of hear that sound resonating coming through the hills and through the mountains?
In fact, absolutely. Mm. And you should hear what it sounds like when it's coming out of a tunnel but hasn't gotten there yet. It's very cool.
That's awesome.
So this picture here, this is an interesting choice of picture. You notice the photo in the distance there. Yep. So this is the Lackawanna River coming into Pittston Junction, and behind the photographer, that's where the river empties into the Susquehanna. So from about Manuka on down to here, the river is a very rusty color because there's mine water leaching into the river. So it always has this sort of rusty color to it. So my buddy Tony V walked out on the bridge and took that photo for me. He took a few photos for me, and that's the one we used. And the challenge here was to get the water that I built to color match the water in the photo. So this was what I was talking about with you guys pre-show. This was one of those scenes where until the very last minute, I didn't know if it was going to be successful or not. You know what I mean? Because it was only at the very end that it all came together. But for example, if you look at the trees and the tree color, it's very difficult to tell where the real trees leave off and the photo backdrop begin. So and it's the same thing with the watercolor, you know. I mean, through a little bit of luck, it just matches, you know. And I was very gratified to have that scene come out the way it came out. This is the subject of my last article in Model Railroad Hobbyist.
Yes. So that's, you do a column for them called Getting Real, correct?
Right.
And in that, and this is hashtag not sponsored. So we're not sponsored by MRH in any way.
Right.
But you do a basically a step-by-step breakdown of how you built this scene.
That's correct.
In that article. And if, I mean, this is, to me, this, I think the thing that makes it for me is that photo backdrop in, you know, that, that essentially is almost seamless from for that tree line. It's proportioned correctly. I just, it's really, really amazing.
Yeah. this was one of those scenes that I kind of put off building for quite a while because I knew it was going to be tricky.
And, yeah.
As scenic area crept towards this, I realized that it was being basically hemmed in from each side, and it was just ridiculous to have a finished scene on each side, but have a plywood box that on a 2x4 that the trains were running over. You know, it had to go. So I decided to tackle it, and it turned into a very fun project. A lot of cool problem solving things to do, like. There's a turnout on that bridge because in my era, there was one.
Right.
And I needed it to be there anyway. I had to figure out a way to get the feeders to it. And I had to figure out how I was going to do the walkway. And even just the abutments and the layout of the girders was very, very tricky. Very non-standard because it's there's a track in the foreground that splits off. One of which is the Lehigh line and the other one goes to the Taylor secondary. And there's a track behind it, which is the other track on the Lehigh line. Both of those are the mountain cutoff.
Sure. Let me, I think Tom sent one more across and he says, okay, I'll stop. But this
up, gives Tom? You're doing a great job. Oh, yeah,
Tom gets the assist and the paycheck for
this
tonight.
Is the drone shot in this location.
So there's three tracks there.
Right.
Wow.
How deep is this scene, Mike, on your layout?
It's the depth of Pittston Yard, so it's about 26 or so inches.
Wow, and it just with the photo.
Because
backdrop,
the Pittston Yard, I should point out, is immediately to the left. And Pittston Junction is immediately to the right.
Okay. Really well done with the track work there and the ties on top of the bridge. I like the weathering there. That's excellent. So what's the locomotive? We got a locomotive traversing one of the bridges here. What is that?
That looks like an ex-Lehigh Valley pup, SW8.
SW8.
If it's the one I'm thinking of, it used to have dynamic brakes, and Conrail took them off. Huh. So that was done with a 3D printed housing that I bought from some guy.
Okay.
Wow.
That's really good.
Wow.
Now is that the switch job there for the Pittston Yard, or I got it right that time?
Actually, that might be the same local that we saw in another photo, but just leaving the yard.
This one.
Nope.
Nope.
It's a different switcher.
One of the 140.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes the locals will have a switcher or a pair of switchers or a GP38 or a GP38 U23B pair. I mean, it just depends on what the tonnage is.
That's outstanding. So you essentially assign power by tonnage then?
I assign power by absolute whim.
Attaboy. Some you never know. Some people really get into it and assess it that way. But so,
well, I mean, so when you think about it now, when you're running a pair of Conrail trains. There's a northbound and a southbound, CGAL, ALCG. So these are not small trains because everything has to get on that train. So that train usually almost always stops at Mehoopany and, drops off and picks up. And then the same thing at Pittston Yard. So it's always a fun job because there's plenty of stuff to do, and it might take you an hour and a half to run that train.
Yeah. What's your average car? What's your maximum car train length then for the layout? Or do you have an average that you keep it at? Or
we started out with 25 to 28 car trains, and that's a good length when there's a bunch of people. When it's just my buddy Dave and I, we go longer. And a lot of times the traffic dictates the train. Sometimes we have to run an extra because the yard will get clogged up depending upon how the locals run. You know what I mean? So what's been cool is to kind of experience the traffic evolving organically by the need of what's happening. But I mean, I've run, 45 car trains, if that's what it takes, and that's when you see a 5 or 6 unit consist on that train usually.
Yeah. So what does a typical operating session look like at your layout? So how many operators are you bringing in? Can your layout hold?
It's a good question. A lot of what we used to do, we've kind of gotten tired of. So we used to have op sessions with, 6, 7, 8 people, and gets like herding cats. You know what I mean? It's just
been there.
So what we've been finding lately is like 4 people, 5 people. That's a good number. When you have that number of people in 1,800 square feet, you go off and do your thing, and you might not see anybody for 45 minutes.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
but then you might get to a point where you're interacting with one of the other operators, which is again, very, very realistic. What I don't care for is that whole clogged aisle syndrome. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, it's the people management portion of it that is probably the least ideal part of it. In those bigger sessions, I never ran a train. I was just facilitating, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay, we need a train for this guy, or we need these two guys on a. You know what I mean? It was just
a train master, or a superintendent type of thing.
Right. Exactly. Train. I mean, it's a good analogy there. So, which is fine because then when you go to somebody else's house, they were doing that, and you get to run trains. But
yep.
I mean, there was a long period of time where I knew Confalone's layout better than I knew my own. I wasn't running on it. It's nuts, crazy. When the pandemic hit, Mike and I talked a lot about that. And we said, even if it's just us running our own layout, why aren't we running our layout? And I just thought, Jesus, that's, again, so obvious that I'm glad he said it, because who knows if I'd ever come to that same, conclusion. And I decided I was going to go down and start running trains myself. Yeah. And it took me weeks to run the entire circuit. And you know what was cool about that? I learned every job and every spot intimately. I learned my own layout in a way that I hadn't learned before, And then as I started to bring, incorporate people a little bit here and there, Mike C likes to say less is more, and he's right. And these smaller sessions that we've had have just been laid back. Somebody wants to, you don't always have to have like everybody running something at all times. You can just kind of maybe do a little rail fanning if that's what you want to do. Yeah. You don't have people gabbing and talking over the sound of the railroad and kind of distracting from the op session. I mean, there's the social aspect, but we have lunch. You know what I mean? So you don't necessarily have to be gabbing through the entire op session, we've just found that the laid back ones are just maybe they're more suited to us in our older years.
Let's just say advanced or veteran status, right?
Yeah.
There you go. I like that.
Look at it with a. So there's a couple of questions, Mike, coming in from the chat. I just want to catch those real quick. Thomas Splitrock says, you have a dispatcher for your
We used to, right? My buddy Dave, who was a dispatcher in real life, used to dispatch all the op sessions. He never got to run a train. It was like he'd come home from work and then he'd go to work.
Right back to work.
At one of our houses, and that's you know, we were using radios, and I mean, it was, you know, it was very, very intense.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was a lot of fun. I'm not sorry I did it. I just find that, you know, I'm enjoying this particular level of operation.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
And then another Tom Klimoski asks, what's the average time for an op session, and how many trains are you guys running during an op session?
Okay, so I'll give you the current modern kind of version of how we do things. My buddy Dave and I run until our feet hurt, which is usually about 3 to 3.5 hours.
Yeah, concrete floor.
Yeah, I mean we've got the you know, those little interlocking
the little pads,
exercise mat kind of things. Yep. Down. Yeah. They help a lot, but you know, my 66-year-old feet just aren't what they used to be. You know,
yeah.
Even though I'm wearing my Skechers maximum pad, you know, slip-on shoes.
So, hashtag not sponsored, by the way.
It is not the
official shoe of the Second Section podcast.
And in terms of the number of trains run, it's highly variable because we're sort of running a rough sequence. So some sessions tend to have more mainline trains run. Some sessions are 100% locals.
Yeah.
And some sessions are a mix of the two. It just depends, awesome. You know, Dave will usually at the end of a session, I'll write some notes down while it's fresh in our mind. Can I find if we don't do that when he comes over, it's like, what the hell are we doing here? We got to reconstruct where we were. But if we look at our notes from last time, it's like real obvious. Oh yeah, next train's ALCG, and you know, we haven't run the local to Lacyville in a while. We need to get down there, and you know, that kind of stuff. So it's just kind of, you know, you look at what's in the yard, you know. Stuff's arrived for Kaiser Valley. We got to head up the Taylor Secondary and, you know, run past Taylor and get to the Kaiser Valley and switch out that industrial park. You know what I mean? So, it, like I say, it takes about easily 5 or 6, maybe 7 sessions to kind of go through the whole thing. In that, and there's about, I'm going to guess and say maybe 340-ish cars on the layout. So
wow.
Does that seem like a lot?
It's a lot to me.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So because of that, and I have a lot of cars like all of us in A-line boxes, you know, that can be swapped in and out.
Yep.
But because you don't see the same car necessarily every session, and it could be weeks before you see it again, unless it's like a really standout kind of a car that you know when you get sick of it and it's time to A-line box it for a while and swap it with something else.
Yeah.
But same thing with the power. You know, we'll run, you know, a power set that ran from Allentown to Corning. We'll turn that around and run it from Corning to Allentown next time. And I'll do that until I get sick of looking at it. And then, which is very prototypical, really.
They
often ran these sets back and forth. You know, not exact every time, but it was not unusual to see similar engines on the same trains for a period of time. You have a 90-day inspection or whatever, swap them out. Hoka One shoes, huh?
Yeah. Right, so friend of the podcast, Scott Thornton, says Hoka One shoes. They're killer good. So maybe take a look at that. That's if you can take one thing away, Mike, from the podcast and joining us.
You're gonna get quality footwear.
you're gonna get quality footwear out of it. So Tom Johnson has just been feeding us content behind the scenes here.
Cross him up. I'll talk about him.
This one's another.
Tell me when it's too much.
Yeah, it's about trees. So. Let me see.
Before you do that, I want to piggyback on what Mike was just saying about the power consists.
Yeah.
We do that in the prototype all the time. Mm-hmm. Even today, they'll run a set of power until one or both of them run into their 92-day inspection.
Right.
Or like they'll assign certain engines to it, like in Green Bay or like me in Manitowoc. I've got one engine. I got it. unless I bad order it or it is due inspection, I don't see another one for 3 months.
Right.
You know, exactly. So, you know, and so there's always, you always have, unless you're going like around here, unless it's the trains that typically go all the way down to Chicago and come all the way back, you don't typically see a lot of power swapping out on the more intermediate jobs, like their job from Green Bay going up to Gladstone and back, that usually, or up to the Sault Ste. Marie, that always has typically the same power or pretty close to it for 92 days, you know, like you were saying.
And what we'll try to do is, if we decide we're getting tired of looking at a switcher in Pittston, we'll put it on the next southbound to Allentown, and it's going down there for servicing.
Oh, yeah.
And we might not see it for a while, and then when we need to get it back, it comes back on a... I mean, yes, I'll five-finger an engine sometimes in sessions, but I would prefer to deliver it on a road train.
See, my railroad only has one engine. I've got to build an engine to have to replace it for my 92 day. So that's what I'm trying to do now is build US my second scalers. Engine.
You have a whole different.
I know, right? Hey, I will say this much: I have a S scale friend of mine, Rick Koch, and he's doing the exact same line, 76 to what did he say? 76 to 83.
Mm-hmm. Exact same line as me.
You are, yes, really? In S scale.
This guy, obviously,
but in S scale.
So that's he
has an abandoned supermarket that he's building.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So this is the picture that Tom is sharing.
Oh my God!
So just, buddy Dave.
Yeah.
So and what are you looking at there?
Trees.
It looks like he's 12 miles away.
Well, see, it's this feeling of depth that you want to get when you're looking through there. So I'll point out a couple of things here. So in the upper left, you can kind of see the edge of a scenic divider. It's like a lighter colored line between the trees. Mm-hmm. Upper left. On the left side is that Meshopin that we looked at earlier, mm-hmm. with the grain mill and the switcher in the local. And then to the right, below, is the Mahoopany plant. You can just see a little bit of the roof of it in that shot. Dave's probably working it. Right over Dave's shoulder, behind him, is 84 Lumber. You can see the building and also the sign looming above the tree line there.
Yeah,
that's modeled after a real location. I forget the town, the Jenkins. And over to the right, can you see the bridge?
Yep.
So that bridge is the Route 11 road bridge that crosses at DuPont. And that's where the DNH, Conrail, Route 11, and a stream all cross one another, stacked up.
Oh, my gosh.
It's actually really cool. When Tony V took us down there, I'm looking at it, and I said, I turned to Dave, I said, I got to model this. I have to build it.
Wow.
So that's probably about maybe 25 feet or 30 feet of depth you're looking at there.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And just to give, for those that are listening on the audio playback here, this perspective that we're looking at, it's like we're looking at a forest of super trees. And it's absolutely amazing. And how it, you know, from the foreground all the way back to the back backdrop is, it's completely super trees from the looks of it here. So, I mean, this is a far upgrade from the old puffball, you know, scenery technique.
Yeah. I mean, there was only one way to do it right. I had to make a friend of making these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. Like, so, and I think that's a podcast episode all on its own. Is how did you? I mean, because I'll query about this later, but because I have a lot of trees to, you know, to get in there, and I'll just have to figure out how am I gonna do all of those trees for my layout as well, because I'm doing northern Wisconsin, so it's Tree City, right?
And probably don't you have a lot of pine trees though?
I do have a lot of pine trees, but a lot of birch, a lot of poplar, you know, those
That's
types
a big
of
problem.
Things.
I do not know a way of mass producing those. Anybody can build a pine tree, but build a lot of pine trees, it's a whole different
That's a whole nother game. Yeah, it says just a note here from Split Rock, Scenic Express stock just went up.
It'd be nice if they could deliver some product, I'll tell you that. They have been, I've been waiting a year on several cases of super trees I've had on order.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's amazing. So, and then, you know, there's definitely a family of the Sasquatch in there somewhere. And I would bet that there's some whimsical bits in there. I'm guessing.
Have you done that at all, Mike, where you put little kind of fun little things inside your tree inside there just to,
no, but I have occasionally seen a fairly impressive looking spider crawl out of there.
Ooh.
Not long, but
so here's, we got some more questions from the chat, and Mike, I appreciate you fielding them. Sure. This one's from Tom again. What makes Conrail your choice versus the more colorful predecessor lines?
No, it's a valid question. I would say that I did probably my most intense and productive rail fanning during a time when Conrail was really hitting their stride. And I just got to appreciate them as the railroad they ended up being, as, you know, just a high quality railroad, you know. And I felt the same way about Santa Fe when I used to rail fan out west.
Yeah.
And it's no accident that Conrail and Santa Fe did a lot of partnership stuff, you know, TVLA and, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, they both kind of ran, I think, high quality operations. Eventually, I mean, the early years of Conrail were a little dicey, but very colorful. And I probably my 84. So I don't think I answered this question. I think I kind of I strayed away from it. But 1984, I arrived at, and it was driven largely by several things that were kind of traffic related and also motive power related.
Yeah.
In 1984, I can still run SD45s.
Yeah.
And but the first SD50s were being delivered to eventually displace them. So I'm right in the process of that. So I can just about having both of those on the layout. I had to get rid of my SD60s and my SD80 Max and all the modern stuff that I had, you know, Dash 840 stuff. That's all that I had to get rid of, all of that. But I was able to, you know, fill in with some earlier stuff that is, to me, you know, more interesting. So that's how I ended up with. And then in 1984 is also a time when the big Mahoopany plant was still shipping a ton out by rail. And they did that up until about, I think, 87, when Conrail screwed them and they said no more rail outbound. They still get raw materials in from Reading and Northern, who does a good job, you know, servicing them. But it's all trucks. If you go to that place now, there must be 500 trailers in the lots there. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh!
Now that plant for Lehigh Valley was their number two consignee behind Bethlehem Steel. So it shows you how big an operation it was. 24/7.
Unbelievable. So what did you do with that that displaced power?
Did
you sell it? Sold it? There's a question from Tom again. He said, did you sell it to Dave Abeles?
Well, that's not impossible. You know, it went out to a lot of different people, and Dave might have gotten something.
Have you ever thought about just kicking the tires on, hey, I'm going back to the Lehigh Valley for doing a throwback session where, okay, we're taking all the Conrail stuff off.
I have plans to do a throwback session. I've accumulated some older rolling stock for that purpose. Mike Confalone had no use for a trio of 628s, and I've got them. Yeah. So
were those in the white and the black? Is that what they were? Is that what those
I
were?
I think I have both color schemes.
They had them in both the Snowbird and
the Snowbird and the red. And the
right. Red. So I've got you know one and two of the other, and I don't remember really which is which. So that's something I hope I live long enough to do someday, but I have not really done anything with it as of yet. I think it'd be a very cool thing to do.
I'm off next weekend.
Mike will invite yourself over to his house.
Yeah, Andy and I will be there next weekend. Just
sure, now he's inviting me.
Yeah.
So Tony Dixon has a question here. What's your favorite scene on your layout?
I'm going to give you a potentially cliched answer. It's the last thing I did. It's always my favorite.
That's a great answer, actually.
So that would be the last thing. That's the bridge scene, correct? That you.
I guess chronologically, that would be the last thing I did. However, I guess it's going to be the October and November Model Railroad Hobbyist. I have a two-parter on doing. How would I even describe this? The place name is Duryea, and it's the first. It's probably the next thing you hit. Leaving Pittston Junction and heading on the mountain cutoff south, and it was because of the way the addition connected to the house, I ended up with this sort of weird kite-shaped area that you really couldn't put tracks into. But I looked at it like, hey, like what?
No, I'm just.
It's just the way you said it. It was this kite shaped thing.
It's what it's shaped like. You'll see if you look at the article, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I looked at that for months, thinking, the hell am I going to do with this? And I realized it was an opportunity to do another one of those depth kind of scenes. But I didn't want to put 8,000 trees in there. I wanted to do something interesting. Yeah. So on the prototype, there's a road that goes through there. The road ducks under the mountain cutoff. There's a junkyard, which occupies a lot of sort of like this low hillside going up.
Sure.
And the junkyard building itself is just a cool looking building, you know. So I decided, I've got to model this. So that was a really fun project to do. But because of where it was, you can't get in there to build it. So I had to figure out how to build the scene in my workshop, how to get it from my workshop to that place and get it into place and then kind of like finish off the area. So it's a very non-standard, for me anyway, layout building exercise that I thoroughly enjoyed. I had a ball doing that.
Oh, man. I can't wait to read about that. So that's coming out when? October?
I believe it's October or November. Yeah. Okay. I only just uploaded the copy.
That's okay. So I wasn't laughing. It's just the way you describe the scene, you know, I'm just thinking, oh my God, how is he going to engineer this marvel together? And that's what I was thinking, but we do have a couple more questions here while Mike is sorting things out. So, so obviously DCC, what are you using to power your layout?
I'm all NCE Power Pro. I've got four districts, and basically each staging yard has its own booster, and then the addition has a booster, and the original layout has the main unit, and so it's all NCE, and like I said, all the decoders are Loxound.
And let's see here. I think Stephen N has one. He says, "What's your favorite type of trains to run?" So intermodal manifests, auto parts, auto racks, etc.
Yeah, we don't really run intermodal because it wasn't really something they were doing on this line. D&H did a little bit of it. I do sometimes throw some intermodal on a D&H train. But give me a good manifest any day.
Yeah.
To me, that's a real train. Actual boxcars, you know.
Yep.
No graffiti.
No graffiti.
No graffiti.
No graffiti.
Yeah, it's a plague. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's good. That's
but
real
not
good.
Not here. Not on my watch.
Very good. So, So that was a great introduction. Now we'll get into the main part of the show.
Right?
No, this has been fantastic, Mike.
Nice segue, by the way.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. So, we'll keep going as long as you want to go. But we do have I want to give the audience here. I think we're carrying about 60 people still in the chat yet here into hour two. And I just want to give them opportunity to ask any questions. Train Life's got another one coming back. It says, do you keep NC throttles for each district, prospective operator, or do people bring their own?
Well, we have a very scientific way of doing that. I just have a crap load of NCE throttles, and when you need one, you grab one.
You need one, you grab one, right.
Yeah, I'm kind of finding that's an actual unit of measurement for most layout operators. Crap load. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then just to get back to what I was carrying on about before I popped the question up. So anyone in the chat, feel free to ask questions. We're going to, Mike, if you do us the honor, we have this thing called What's on Your Workbench, mm-hmm. where viewers, you know, basically write in. And I think Rich Koch has one of his models there, I think is a Conrail U33C and S scale. So we'll look at that.
Big S scale audience here.
Yeah. We have a following
hashtag crap load.
Yeah. So
you know what's gonna happen is that's gonna end up on
Be trending.
Yeah, it'll be trending. That'll be end up on the crossing gate here. Is that'll, gonna be yeah, that's hashtag gonna be, crap load is gonna be on the crossing hashtag gate. You know that.
Yeah, so that's what we look forward to is those odd little comments from the crew here. So I'll bring up the old.
Did we give the band the night off or what?
I did give the band the night off tonight. Okay. But I didn't want to blare more. You know what? Let me see if they're here. I'll cue the band here real quick. We'll take a short commercial break here. Hey, and we're back, everybody.
Very slick, very slick.
Yeah. We have little bumpers that play in that entertain our crew here. So
we found them in the parking lot of the dollar store.
Yeah, they were looking hungry musicians looking for work. So
yep.
For those who are new to the second section podcast here, we're going to go through what's on your workbench. So this is where we go out and poll all of the members of our second section podcast Facebook group. And they show us what's on the workbench.
Obviously, on Andy's, I would say everything.
Yeah, so this is not bad here, Mike. So this is just a teaser. We usually grade each workbench for cleanliness and organization. Those get demerits. So the more clutter and chaos you have, the more points you get. And then we arbitrarily pick a winner or a workbench of the week. So it's like the whose line is it anyway, right? The points don't matter, and it's all made up. But
I like you were pointing out earlier, Mike. I try to keep mine as a bench as the baseline.
Yep.
So we
all know everybody models in 12 square inches on the bench,
right?
Right.
There's look at all the space that we have here on Mike's workbench. Phil Aloco or Alico says Mike Ostertag is the winner, but it's a good use of the vertical here. You know, getting stacking projects on top of projects. We really like to see.
I didn't even take a picture to the left. To the left, you can't even see the tabletop. I didn't want to overwhelm everybody.
Yeah. And that's a good way to cue it up here. So Tony Dixon, he's if I'm not mistaken, is a fellow S scaler. Yep. And he's working on his feed mill here. Little area that's visible through the truck drive, along with designing, and he's a 3D printer. So he's doing and designing up some West Steel tanks for molasses and sunflower oil that are going to go outside the building. So it's a nice little scene that's starting to shape up there. And here's some more photos of that from Tony. Looks like the building interior there. And a couple more here. I'm guessing this is one of the tanks that he's got set up and ready to go.
Have you 3D printed that?
Looks like it, yeah. Tony, if you're out there tonight, let us know if you 3D printed that one.
Nice.
Yeah, here's another tank here. Some nice
detail. Pretty sure he did.
Pretty sure he did. So we have Philip Herman. He's building the Java Creek Ballasted Bridge deck in Essex, Montana. Styrene base and ties, PC ties soldered in place. Code 83 rail with code 55 guide rails. So this
that's starting to come along.
Yes, it is. Philip is a local modeler here in Wisconsin. He's got a...
And I might have missed it. What scale is that?
HO.
Yep, that's HO.
And here he is building fast track style turnouts. Mm-hmm. So he's making a lot of progress here. Okay, so we got Matt Forkum here. He's got some progress on his backdrops here. Where he is, looks like he's surrounding his workbench and home office, and it was a tricky to measure and install correctly. Now, I will say curves and masonite and making sure that your seams don't end up on the apex or the radius is a tricky endeavor.
It seems like a pretty tight radius for masonite too, because I've had it snap on me trying to do that. So I wonder if you wet it.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how you did that, Matt. Let us know if you're out there tonight. Michael Shanky is working on some grade crossings using some black plastic banding.
There's some taco sauce there.
Yeah. So this is obviously the stuff for bundling up probably like lumber and stuff like that. That's pretty interesting use of something for the grade crossings. And then he gets bonus points here for the Tamiya panel accent color. We call that taco sauce because you put that stuff pretty much on everything. And second section podcast in the background, Michael, that's going to keep you high in the running for workbench of the week here. So we got Paul August. Looks like he's back at the workbench working on a Blair line feed store.
He's always so organized.
His workbench is immaculate. It's
disgustingly organized.
It's disgustingly organized. And here he's got another entry. This is a...
Nice.
AMB laser kit yard office for Sinclair Oil. Very well done, Paul.
I like the air conditioner.
I was just looking at that. Yeah, I wonder if that came with the kit or not.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's kind of sharp.
That's really cool.
One of those.
Sticking out that far, it could almost use a little support bracket underneath it, though.
And then here's his Campbell Stockyard that he's got to the scene, or that is, it's in a scene here that he's building up.
That's cool. So you don't usually see that modeled. I don't.
Yeah, big Midwestern railroad here. So he's doing the Chicago Northwestern Mondovi line.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool.
That's actually going to be, it looks like it's a scene in progress too. And that
yeah.
That's going to be a really cool scene once it gets all done.
And we have here Sal Natale just cleaning up his workbench. The in-laws are coming into town, and the office doubles as a guest room. He does have the Atherin Blue Box passenger from the kitchen table from last week's episode on the club layout with the body-mounted couplers, weight, and resistor wheels. That turned out pretty good, Sal.
Some nice structures in the background, too.
Yeah, look at this. Nice station there in the back depot. And you got some street rails here. That's nice club layout here. And then I won't play it on the video tonight, but here's a video if anyone wants to watch of his train here running on his, it looks like the club layout here. So there's, if you check out the Facebook page here, we got our buddy Sal and a YouTube video out there that'll show him running that train that we see on screen here today. Paul Bukowski.
This turned out so good.
Finished his S-scale hopper car, and now he's on to the next project. So this looks great.
Yeah, Paul, that turned out amazing.
Well done. Nice patch out for FURX. Here's Rick Koch. And this is him working on a Phase 2A U33C. And he is converting it from American Flyer to S-Rail proper. Wow. It's going to be painted in Penn Central, patched out for Conrail. Much work yet to do. You can see he's got, looks like some 3D printed components there to replace some of the American Flyer stuff that's in there. And very this cool. is a nice shot of the U33C as the template there. Shane Mason chimes in tonight, finishing the layout after years of working on it. Looks like, and Shane's an S-scaler. Or excuse me, N-scaler, not S-scaler, N-scaler.
Pretty small. Oh, boy.
And Shane will be sure to be giving me some static about that miscue on live television. So I'm ready for it, buddy. But yeah, very good, Shane. Keep the progress rolling. John Whithouse says, not much progress over the last few weeks, but I am getting ready to decal his Kara Terminal Railway Kitbash Transfer Caboose with his decals from Circus City Decals.
Hashtag, I guess everybody owns one of those green mats.
Yes.
Right?
And I've got one.
Yeah. I think everyone has it.
I was just at Hobby Lobby the other day, and I looked at a different one.
Was it green?
Yeah, it was green. They've got several different sizes there.
It's like the blue tubs where you put all of your model railroad boxes in, right? You know, your rolling stock and all that good stuff. And then he's got the taco sauce train there. So he's got all of the Tamiya panel accent color. Well done, John. I think John won. Here's Robert Pettit.
Yep.
He's got a couple of Sewline switchers here. Looks like an old Fairbanks Morris and maybe a Baldwin, if my eyeball is looking at that correct. And then he's got a nice Milwaukee Road. Looks like an SW1. Maybe.
Yep.
Yep. Moving on.
That's exactly what it is. The old donkey. Yeah. That's what they called him on the Milwaukee.
That's what they called him on the Milwaukee Road. And then it looks like he's getting ready to do some DCC installations here. He's got all of his wires and stuff into the, looks like the voltage tester here. So he's ready to go. David Winther was in Canada over a week, and he's installing a ceiling in the basement. So I haven't had much time at the workbench, but I had a little headway on the brass caboose that he's been working on. So this is looking really nice. What are we looking at?
He comes up with some pretty inventive ways to mask things off, doesn't he?
Yes. So it looks like he's got his brass caboose here on the stand, and then I'm guessing we're masking off the roof and doing some painting possibly on top. Huh. Here's another picture of it here. He said he had a blemish that he had to sand out on the cupola. Roof reprimed it and will repaint soon. So you can see the underneath there, he's protecting the bottom of the rest of his paint job there, and he's just focusing on the cupola roof. But he made like a nice little hat for his caboose. So he didn't get it all messed up. Nice. I mean, you got the Tamiya accent panel wash here in the back. That's good. You get some bonus points for that. You get some demerits here, David, for there's a lot of space that we could put some.
I do also have a question, is that does cover an awful lot. It's like putting an umbrella up over a patio table.
Yeah.
You look down over the top of it, you can't see exactly what's underneath there. So I'm just saying.
So we'll give David a pass here as, you know, he's chasing the dream here. He was up in Canada at Lake of the Woods, and he caught a 50 plus inch muskie. So well
that
done.
That looks heavy.
I'm guessing that's probably a 40 to 35, 40 pound fish.
Jeez.
So David, well, I'm going to just invite myself to come muskie fishing with you sometime. So we'll have to get together and go chasing for skis when you're not at the workbench there. So great catch. It's good to see that you're in the 50.
Is that a GoPro?
That is a GoPro. They're probably filming. They're probably filming out in the boat. So this goes right in there. So into one of the power outlets there. Not that I would ever do that. I would never go musky fishing film it. So good job, David. All right. Let's see what else we got out here tonight. Paul Kassar just completed some Bowser RS3s weathered with pan pastels.
Nice.
Nicely done. Very subtle. That's well done. Not overplayed. Very good.
I like the KFC too.
Yeah, right? In the background there. Well, they got to eat. Let's see what else we have here. And then here's another close-up shot of the tops. That's nice work there, Paul. Very good. John Dick is working on half a dozen Milwaukee Road rebuilt two-bay covered hoppers from Lions West. Looks like he's in the cleanup phase of those 3D printed models. Let's see if he's got another picture there. Oh. Corey Bukowski is building a pair of shoving platforms here. A lot of space on the workbench, but yes, well done.
This is great. I mean, you get to see people actually doing stuff, you know, that you might not see any other way.
Hey, yeah. Hold on. Go back for a second to that one. Are you not going to talk about the horn hook coupler?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even see it.
I haven't seen one of those in a long time.
I think he gets bonus points for actually having a horn hook coupler in a photo.
It'd be brave enough to show that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is that, the old X2F?
I believe that's what it was.
Oh my gosh. Corey, you might take the taco here tonight with the
Now, to be fair, that may be a transition car too. He might be using that as some sort of a transition car. It might have a KD on one end and a horn hook on the other, just because he might not have enough KDs to do what he wants to do and stuff. We've all been there. We've all done it.
Yep, we've all been there. Phil Alico or Aloco? I don't know. We'll have to talk about that. Problem with the modeling, it's starting to get too many projects. This is what we like to see here, Phil. A lot of projects on the workbench. Nice use of the vertical here.
A lot of primer. Let's see. There's an RS3, a CF7, a couple cabooses. That looks like it could possibly be a GP20 or maybe a GP10, a couple of RS1s.
Yeah.
Looks like maybe a GP35 or I don't know. I can't tell. That looks like that looks like another CF7 in the background.
Yeah.
In the back. Nice.
It's good. Nice. Very good, Phil. The raccoon lines. And here we are a little closer so you can see the CF7 and.
Oh, that's an SD18.
Ooh.
Or is it an SD24? Or is it a SD20?
I think we need to get some clarification from Phil because I think you're just guessing numbers now.
Well, I'm trying to think Illinois Central had, I think that might be like an SD20.
I think you're right.
Santa Fe SD26.
There you go.
I believe. Because it's got the hump back. Behind the cab.
Behind the air filter.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Amazing. This is a fun game. We'll have to start a new game here called Name That Loco.
Oh, jeez.
So here's Bob Frischella. He's making trees and planting them on the hillside.
This pic I've seen. But see, this is a perfect example of doing fall correctly. It looks fantastic.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And he's got his background photo. You can see, like, he's got an area where trees have lost their leaves, plus a whole bunch of color in the back. Right. But then he's worked that right into the foreground, too.
Your button's a killer, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like.
All good.
That's very good. Very good, Robert. Nathan Crabb. Well, looks like he's got a pulpwood car for a friend on his fictional Nicolet Central. Well done. Nathan, if you're not busy, I need a few of these done too. So,
I know for a fact Nathan's not busy.
He's not busy.
No, Nathan's not busy.
All right. This one will trip me up. Ken DeBecky, working on the patches for my street running asphalt layout based in Anaheim, California. HO scale. White paper towel will be the black patches, while the black showing will be weathered asphalt.
Makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's masking off what he's not going to weather. And this is step 3 out of probably 15. Cool little scene you have coming together here, Ken. It'll be interesting to see how the asphalt turns out. I like the bridge going around the corner there. It's pretty cool.
That's like very cool.
Yeah. Keep them coming, Ken. All right, Lloyd Robertson. Here we go. Here's his mess right now. The decoder bug bit a few weeks ago, and who knows what it will be tomorrow. But look at this. He's making good use of the space. There's a little bit of right here, a little bit of open space here on the lower right. You can get a few more projects in there. But I love the random you know, markers and paint markers and all that stuff. Coffee cup here, blue mat as opposed to a green mat. That's interesting. Interesting that he went with that color. And then, of course, the Tamiya panel line taco sauce in the back there. High marks for that. Well done, Lloyd. Oh, here's another one from Ken. After step 3, and we're progressing here. Gray tan paint. So the asphalt is starting to weather. Tony Dixon here's looks like 13 minutes ago put up what looks to be his 3D printed tanks, the inside of that. So you can see the structure in there. It's pretty cool.
Andy, go back to that one right above Tony's right there. That one right there.
Yeah.
Mike, on your layout, when you were building your layout and stuff, and as you build your, do you use boxes and stuff like that to try to gain perspective for structures that you're putting on the layout, like what he's doing there?
Definitely. Yeah. Very, very big on mock-ups to get a feel for how they're going to look in a space.
Good question.
Yeah, that's a great way of, I'm doing the same thing on mine, and it's really helping to gain like whether or not I want to do certain things, you know.
If you looked at my Kaiser Valley Industrial Park right now, you'd see 3 of them.
Yeah, so here's Tony showing all 13 sizes of the West Steel vertical tanks in S scale. So obviously, he's designing and building them up. Mike Slater, he's coming.
That's more like it. Attaboy, Mike.
Attaboy, Mike. DCC and sound on the North Shoreline models. So Mike's got a nice little traction layout with the North Shore there.
He's actually really good at modeling traction.
We're working right on top of the tracks.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a great utilization of space.
We don't need this cutting mat.
No, there's one under there.
There it is. Yes.
Okay. He's got one under right there.
Right there. It's a little green one in the background.
It's 99% of it covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is perfect. I mean, this gives programming on the main a whole new meaning.
Right.
It looks like we're doing some heavy duty programming here. Well done, Mike.
Is that the first? Is that the first Katie trip pin bender that we've seen?
For the pliers over here on the left.
Yeah.
Might be.
I haven't seen very many of those in pictures lately.
Liam Hoffman. doing some weathering. This is really good. Well done.
That turned out nice.
Yeah.
That's a cool covered hopper there. Nice Burlington old CB&Q covered hopper. Lightly faded and lightly weathered, not overdone. Some nice streaking on the Burlington plaque. That's very good, Liam.
Those went up to the Groveland mine all the time.
Yeah. I'm going to need some of those for my layout. Yeah,
you are.
Boy, Nathan and Liam are going to have to talk to me after the show. And then Liam here, he's fixing a custom GP60 for the Nicolet Central.
That's actually a very interesting unit he chose to do, because those demonstrators were very unique to the GP60 because everything was rounded on them.
Really? I thought they were kind of a square.
All the corners, including the front window, the cab corners, everything was rounded for whatever reason. But then when they went into production, they became square.
They did like three of them, I think, like that, right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, there were like three or four of them that were like that. Yep. The last four axle demonstrators, I believe EMD did.
So I was this many years old when I learned about the rounded demonstrator GP60s.
Yep.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And if you look, he's got the lighting package correct on there, I believe, because it had the full Alaska Railroad of it. I want to say I can't remember where they went. I want to say they may have gone up to Alaska, but they had the whole shooting match with the lighting package. Yeah.
It looks like it. Holy cow. All right. And then Chris Hiley, he says he just finished reworking Blossberg, new signals added, replaced the servo with a tortoise, and added detection to the switch. Crew is packed up and ready to head home. Time for a cold one. Well done, Chris. And that looks like it's going to take us through what's on our workbench for this evening. So that was, thank you, section crew. That was awesome. Thank you for taking the time to post as we rated. I think I'm going to give workbench of the week to Mike Slater.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, work programming on the main like that is something else. So, high marks there. Well done, Mike. And congratulations on your first workbench of the week win. So I just want to, before we close her down tonight, I just want to give the section crew out there in the chat. We're still carrying about 54 out there, almost on to 2 hours now. Any last chance for romance here? Any questions for Mike? If you want to talk about his layout or the stuff that he's doing with Dartmouth Locomotive Works, or what's coming up on the crew call with Mike Rose, or any of the stuff that he's doing for MRH, why don't you go ahead and throw it in the chat? But Mike Ostertag, I just wanted to kick it over to you before we close down for tonight. What do you got? What do you think of this? This was pretty amazing content for tonight.
You know, I don't know, man. I mean, it's got like charisma issues. And
yeah, he's entertaining. Doesn't want it.
He's entertaining. Yep. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We had to drag everything out of him, and it was just, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I just,
you're
I'm
sorry.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
You're sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I tell you what. Oh, now he's assuming there's going to be a next time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, hey.
Just put in a picture of my workbench. We got a workbench of the night thing.
I tell you, I'm on the verge of going in the other room here and tearing everything right off the wall. I really am. I will say this much. You have inspired me, though, with how to do the trees and how to place trees and all of that. I mean, that you that's invaluable, learning things like that. And there are techniques that take time to learn. You know, it's like you said, nobody's going to be perfect. Tom, it's not something that everybody's good at right away, you know? And it's
I didn't say I was. And in fact, my first round of super trees, I looked at it and I thought, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you need them, you stay on it, you know. And I could probably save some people some time with a, you know, a 10-minute thing on making the trees, because really to distill it down to anything more than that would be overthinking it. You know, I think that's kind of the takeaway, is that when you're making that many trees, you got to boil it down to, you know, specific, basic, reliable, repeatable methodology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically making a process out of it. And then, right. and then executing on top of that. So there's a couple of interesting questions coming in. Phil is going to ask, how long does it take to go from end to end?
That's about 22 minutes.
Well, that's not horrible. That's pretty good.
I mean, that's assuming you go nonstop, which you never do, really.
Right?
Yeah, right. Right. And then Tony Dixon, if you were to change scales starting over, what would you do?
S scale. Why even ask?
I think S scale is actually a very nice scale. I think it's easier probably to see as you get older. And I like the you know, the hands-on, you gotta build it aspect of it. On the other hand, I never could have done what I've done here in S scale without needing like
right. an
extra lifetime, you know. So there's that aspect of it.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question for you, Mike. So have you gotten some help building the layout, or was this a lone wolf project?
Well, I mean, you know, friends have helped me with lots of aspects of the railroad. I would say that my buddy Dave has probably helped me most of the time doing all the two-man stuff needed.
Sure.
When it was time to build bench work, for example, for the addition, and also in, you know, the portions of the old layout that got, you know, excised. That's a, you know, you can do it yourself, but it's so much easier with two people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to have a buddy, especially to also share perspective and some of that other stuff too.
There are things that I look at and I think, you know, Dave's coming over tomorrow. I just want to see what he thinks about.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a good eye. Sometimes even my wife will come down. She's got an excellent eye for realism. She helped me a lot with one aspect where I was trying to get a road to go into the backdrop and look convincing. And every time I looked at it, it either looked really good or really bad. And I realized I had made the unpardonable mistake of not hitting the backdrop at a 90-degree angle. So,
yeah.
but I couldn't, you know, for this thing. So I realized I had to control the viewing angle so that you could only see it from the spot where it looked right, you know, and she helped me kind of like understand what I wasn't seeing there. So, you know, any intelligent person can give you some good feedback, I think.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So looks like there's a couple questions about short line of the show. This week was a bit chaotic for both Mike and I. We're a little behind on short line of the show. But I just, Mike, first time experience here, wasn't too painful, was it, being on?
I thought it was great. I like your format. I think you guys kind of have this down. Feel like, geez, what am I doing with crew call? You know, this.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Well, hey, I mean, feel free to copy the format, and you know, we won't even charge you a royalty or nothing.
I'll have you run it in the background.
Yeah, there you go. Run it in
the background. You guys can carry on. I'll just listen. I mean, half the reason I started this show was so I could learn more about the hobby, and it's every episode I am learning something, and tonight was no exception, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fantastic.
And I found out about Hoka 1-1 shoes.
There you go.
Hoka 1-1.
Yeah.
The not sponsored quality footwear of the Second Section
podcast. I'll report in on that at some point.
Yeah, very good. So before we close up shop here, I'll do a quick round the horn. Mike, anything else? Mike Ostertag, anything else that you wanted to get into before we close up shop tonight?
If I have any Dartmouth Locomotive Works customers, either or who will see it on YouTube later, thank you for your patience. We've had some real supply chain issues with certain things out of Loxon, particularly the power packs. And I have dozens of installs sitting there waiting for power packs, and have been since May, believe it or not. So it's been a long outage. I am told they'll see them this month and I should have them in September. So hope springs eternal. But when they come in, I'm going to have to, like, you know, close the doors and keep the phone off the hook and just kind of, you know, slave over a hot soldering iron for a while. It'll be nice to have all that stuff out of here too.
And are you going to post those updates up on your Facebook page too, on the crew call?
Oh yeah.
So everyone will. So again, if anyone out there listening, make sure you catch Mike Rose and all of his updates out on. I got all the contact information in the show notes down below. So for the Dartmouth Locomotive Works folks, I hope that those electronic pieces come in soon. Not so that you're slaving over the hot soldering iron, but.
Oh. Be nice to clear some bench space. Maybe you should take a picture of that.
There you go. A little inventory.
There you go.
So you know what I'll do? When they come in and I'm working on all the locos, that's when I'll take a picture.
There you go. So Sokol Old 455 says he has 3 ESU power packs he doesn't need. So.
Wow. Why don't you need them?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a premium price right there.
Oh, yeah. I would.
What bartering.
Yeah, any deal struck here on the Second Section podcast, we're not responsible for any gouging or anything like
no,
that.
No, not at all.
We're just going to abstain from any of those business deals there. So, Mike, I got to say, you've been an inspiration to me personally. You know, when I got back into the hobby, catching you on various podcasts and your articles and stuff in MRH have really helped guide, you know, all of this behind me and where it's going. So it's truly been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And, you know, if you ever want to pop back on the Second Section for any reason at all, you please ask. And if you want to bring some friends, that's okay too. You know, it's the more the merrier here. So, again, I want to thank you. I want to thank the folks out in the chat tonight. We carried about 60 people all the way to the end. Fantastic work to the section crew. The What's on Your Workbench, that was outstanding tonight, folks. Thank you for all of that. And if you guys want to, if you're not members of the Facebook community, come on out and join us. It doesn't cost anything. Low barrier to entry. And then the new guy just has to bring the donuts. So that's all we're asking.
Yep.
All right, gang. I think we're going to tie down for tonight. Again, look forward to listening to this one on the replay. Thanks, everyone, and have a good night.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.